Now we're holding in Yoma, page 54, Oysamach. So now we finally get to the end of the Avodah of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, and the Mishnah describes Pisca, the Yomtev Hoya Oysala Oyavav, the Kohen Gadol would make a Yomtev, would make a Simcha for his friends, Vechola, when the fact that he came out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim safely. There's actually a sikha where the Rebbe talks about that this itself is part of the Avodah as well, that now is bringing down everything that he accomplished on Yom Kippur into the world at large. Anyway, so the Braisa goes on to mention that everybody would be accompanying him while he's walking home. There would be a huge crowd accompanying him. So like Mar said, turn it up on him. There was a Kohen Gadol who was leaving the Beis Hamikdash at the end of Yom Kippur. Everybody is following him out of honor to him. But then they saw Shmai and Avtalion, the Havukasu, that they were coming, and they themselves were coming to pay their respects to the Kohen Gadol. But everybody saw them. They abandoned the Kohen Gadol and started following Shmai of Avtalion because they realized that this Kohen Gadol, Marshall points out, was not such a Talmid Chacham, and we know that even Mamzer Talmid Chacham Kodim L'Kohen Gadol Amoret. So even though Shmaya and Avtalion, there's different opinions among the Rishonim whether they themselves were Geirim. Everybody agrees they were descended. Everybody agrees that their ancestors were Goyim. It's Machlokas whether they themselves were Geirim or whether their ancestors were, which is Bechlal an interesting question if they themselves were Geirim, because you find the halacha is that it's not so simple to appoint a ger to a position of srara, to a position of leadership over the Jewish people, unless imay mi Yisrael. So there's a number of explanations. One of them being that there was nobody else as qualified at that time to lead the Jewish people. Anyway, the point is that everybody realized that yes, a Talmud Chacham outranks a Kohen Gadol, and therefore they abandoned walking and was to pay their respects to the Kohen Gadol, and they went to pay their respects to Shmai and Avtalion. Eventually, Shmai and Avtalion themselves came to take leave of the Kohen Gadol because that was what they had come here for. They weren't coming to upstage him; they were coming to also. So he says to them, Yaisun bnei amomin l'shlom. May the descendants of the nations come in peace. Now at least on the surface of it, he's saying it in a very insulting way, because it actually explains it's a loshen gnai, because they're descended from Goyim, they're descended from Sancheirev, so therefore he's saying the kind of greeting that you would say to Goyim. Now, the Ritva points out that maybe not. The fact is, the Jewish people, born Jews, are called Amomim as well. Nevertheless, though, he still should have chosen a more bekavadika lashon. So they answered him, you know what? What you said was actually very appropriate. Yesum bnei amomin l'shlom, may the descendants of the nations come in peace, da'avdi uvda da'aren, because they act according to the way that Aaron did, oyv shalom v'roydiv shalom. On the other hand, the descendants of Aaron, meaning you, are not necessarily going to come in peace. Because they're not acting the way Aaron did, because here you're doing a nas dvarim. You're throwing up our past against us, which we know is an issue. You're not allowed to do that. So that's what Maharsha said. Listen, I mean, if the Ritva is saying that he used an expression that could mean Jews as well, Then at least according to the Ritva, he should have chosen his words more carefully. But Maharsha says, come on. I mean, then they wouldn't have answered him in such a sharp way. The implication is that they understood him to actually be trying to insult them. And so they turned the insult back on him.
So after a whole day of Yom Kippur,
yeah. I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Evidently a person, you know what, I mean, you know, this is a kin of our type of our covered, Mitzvah Adam and Olam. Here it was an example of, you know, he felt there was a lack of covered to him, and that it was his Maver Aldaita, yeah. It goes to show, in other words, that, yeah, how does the expression go? That Ersh, yes, that's been Ersh Chuvaton. So, yeah, this Kohen Gadol needed to learn that lesson, yeah. The fact is, by the way, also, I mean, the fact is, you see, this Kohen Gadol was great enough to survive the whole Avodah of Yom Kippur as well, so he wasn't Stam a Katla Kanye Ba'agma either, but, yeah. That was a Yom Tov, yeah. Okay. The end of the Perek starts talking about, now that we went through throughout the Masechta, the Kohen Gadol is changing outfits back and forth between Bigdei Zahav and Bigdei Lavan. So now it talks about the Begadim of the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hevi, because there's really no other place in Shas where there's a suitable place to talk about the dinim of it. So here's where it talks about it here in the seventh Perek of Yom. So it deals with the halachas of them, how many threads they have to be woven out of, etc. And then the Gemara deals with various details involving the clothes of the Kohenim and also involving the Kalim of the Mishkan, which after all, those Kalim, at least some of them, and the Aron and the Zbeach HaZahav particularly, also played a starring role throughout Yom Kippur, so it's appropriate to talk about them now also. So Amar Rav Chama Rav Chanina, my dichtiv atzei shittim oibim. The pasuk says about the beings of the Mishkan that they were made of atzei shittim that was standing. Now, in the most poshita sense, it means they were standing in the sense of, Rashi says on the pasuk, that the walls of the Mishkan weren't built like the way you build the walls of a ship, for example, where you have one piece on top of another. Rather, they were vertical, one next to the other. But still, Marsha points out that the fact is, we can see that when we look at the description over there, and we look at the dimensions of the Mishkan, it becomes very obvious that they're oimdim. So the pasuk doesn't really need to specify and say the word oimdim. So what it means is sha'imdim derach gedilasan. It means the beings were standing the way they grew. So the side that was towards the roots when the tree was growing, that's the side that's towards the bottom when they're making it into a beam for the Mishkan, and the same thing with the top. We have that as far as other mitzvahs as well. This is why by the Dalad Minim we have to make sure that that all the Dalad Minim are facing upward derach gedilasan. When it comes to the Esrog, by the way, it's a little bit confusing. The Esrog actually grows on the tree upside down because the Uketz end is the one attached to the tree and it hangs downward. But that's considered to be the lower end in the sense that it's closer to the roots of the tree. The Pitim end is, even though, you know, physically on the tree, it hangs lower down, but it's considered to be higher up because it's further away from the roots.
Sorry, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
If it's holding it upside down. That's it. So the other way.
Right.
By us, the meaning is we do it first, bracha facing down.
That's Midrash Ashkenaz, yes, as they hold it. Yeah, because the idea is because you have to do the bracha over Lasi Yosin. Yeah, you have to do the bracha over Lasi Yosin. So our minhag is we just leave the eswig on the table or in the box or whatever until we finish the bracha, until we're almost finished the bracha, and then we pick them up. Minhag Ashkenaz is, yeah, they hold the eswig upside down during the bracha, and then they flip it over for...
That's
the point. No, the point is that holding it upside down is not derech gedilas, and holding it with the uketz up is you're not yotze the mitzvah. But okay, this way, they're not holding it. You have to realize with the dalad minim, technically you're yotze just holding them. You don't actually have to shake them to fulfill the mitzvah. So if you were to hold them, even you're not holding them together, even you're not shaking them, and then you were to say the bracha, it's kind of too late. You're saying the bracha after you've already fulfilled the mitzvah. Therefore, there's the inyan. You have to make sure that you're only holding the esrog in the right position when you're actually when you finish saying the bracha. So we accomplish that by only picking it up when we're finishing the bracha. In the velt, they accomplish that by holding it upside down for the bracha and then turning it the right side up, or pitch them up once they've finished the bracha in order to then be yotze the mitzvah and do the nanun. So yeah, the Meshach Chochmah, by the way, points out that this is only when you have separate pieces that are put one next to the other, like we have with the beams of the Mishkan and with the Dalad Minim. He says, for example, you don't find that the boards of the Aron or the Shulchan or any of the other Kalim of the Bais Mikdash necessarily had to be Derech Gedilasan, because there you have one big unit made out of those pieces of wood. And he says, by the same token, we don't find by Schach, for example, there's no Indian that the walls of your Sukkah or the Schach of your Sukkah should be Derech Gedilasan, because it's a different Gedder of a Mitzvah. Anyway, so that's one meaning of oimdim. Dover acha oimdim, another meaning of oimdim, shema midin es tzipuyam, they hold on their plating. Now we know the beams of the Mishkan were plated with gold. So Rashi explains, in other words, they nailed them on with nails. So there's a mamidin, the wood helps hold the nails in place, which in turn holds the gold plating in place. Elsewhere, Rashi explains slightly differently. The point is, you might think each beam is 10 amos long. So maybe they made one big sheet of gold 10 amos long and put it on the beam. No, they made smaller pieces and they nailed them in place in various places along the beam. Tosfos brings a different explanation that it means in addition also, it means that the wood never rotted like this. If the wood were to rot away, then the plating would fall off. The wood never rotted, therefore the plating stayed intact and stayed where it's supposed to be. So that's another meaning of onim, shema midin, as sipurim, that they cause the plating to stay where it's supposed to be. What? So Rashi himself actually, yeah, brings that as the second explanation, yeah. Yet another explanation of Omnin is Shema Toma. You might say, look, these beams of the Mishkan are never going to be used again. They were hidden away when the Bismikdash was built. The Kalim of the Mishkan are long gone. They were captured by the Goyim or whatever it was. You might think all that Sibron Vatal Sikurion, their hope is gone and their future is bottled. There's no future for these ever again. Tamad Lema Omnim, therefore the Pasuk says Omnim, Sha Omnim La Olam La Olamim, they last forever and ever. They're still hidden. Here we have when Shlomo built the Bismikdash. We learned earlier in the Masechta, he built the Matmonius Amukus Vakakalus, the winding pathways and labyrinths under the Bismikdash, where eventually the Oren was hidden away there hundreds of years later. But in addition, also the beams of the Mishkan and whatever was left of the Mishkan at that point was also stored away there, and it's still there waiting for Mashiach to come, and then it'll be revealed. And then what they'll do with it then, I don't know. I mean, there's going to be a Bismikdash built out of stone. They're not going to need gold-plated wood beams, but either they'll put them on display, maybe they'll whatever they'll do, but the point is they're still there. There's the idea, you know, that says that Maisa Moshe Nitzchi, and that anything that Moshe did is eternal, and since the Mishkan was built under Moshe's supervision, then it has a certain Nitzchi or state more than any of the other, more than the two Bati Mikdash. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Chama Bar Chanina. My dichtiv es bigdei asrod l'shoris v'kodesh. And Marsha, by the way, add the point. The gold, sure, gold could last for thousands of years, but the wood, you would think, would long since have rotted away, and therefore the Omnim is telling us that not, the wood is still intact as well. So Amar Rav Chama Rav Chanina, my dichtiv es bigdei asrod l'shoris v'kodesh. Among the things Hashem tells Moshe to make or to have made for the Mishkan is the bigdei asrod. Now, the Gemara here is understanding Big Day Asrod to mean the Big Day Kohuna. Now, Rashi on the Pasuk there in Parashas Kisisa and in a couple of other places explains that actually the Big Day Asrod, Rashi learns, first of all, he explains the word Srod comes from an Aramaic word that means a netting. So he explains that it means like this you have at the end of Parashas Bamidbar, you have the packing cloths that they would pack the Oren and the other Kalim of the Mishkan in when they're carrying them from one stopping point to another. So Rashi learns they were made as kind of a netting. They were made with a loose weave so that you could see the content from underneath them, and they're called Big Day Asrod because they were made with that net-like work. But here the Gemara is explaining that it means the Big Day Kohuna. Rashi himself brings that explanation, but he doesn't like it based on the Pesukim. However, Marashah mentions over here that Amban deals at some length with Rashi's objections and says that no, Big Day Asrod, like we see in this Gemara over here, does in fact mean the Big Day Kohuna. That Amban derives the word Big Day Asrod. He do it like this. You have the word, the Gemara is going to douch in it as related to the word Sorid, which means a remnant. So the Ramban explains it does come from the word sorid, but here the Gemara is going to give a drasha what it means, but the simple sense is like a remnant is one thing left out of a whole group. The same way, the Big Day Asrod primarily refer to the Big Day of to the Begadim of the Kohen Gadol, who is the one unique one among the Jewish people who wears those Begadim. So therefore they're called Big Day Asrod. You know, you have nowadays in modern Hebrew, you have the word misrad, meaning an office. That comes from this as well. A misrad is a place where officiating is being done. Anyway, so what does it mean? Es bigdei asrod l'shoris v'kodesh il mole bigdei kohuna lo nishtayim sen ein shor yisrael sodu depolit. Were it not for the bigdei kohuna, there wouldn't have been left of the enemies of the Jewish people, which is the usual euphemism the Gemara uses. There wouldn't have been any remnant or any leftover left. Why? Because it actually says the korbanos are brought by the kohenim wearing the bigdei kohuna, and the korbanos are machaper for the Jewish people. Now the Ion Yaakov points out the fact is, I mean, you can say the same thing. Now you have elsewhere the Gemara talks about, actually Marsha first of all mentions that Marsha mentions that in Erchin and also in Zvachim, actually it mentions it's not just what Rashi is saying that the korbanos are brought with them. There is also the consideration the bigdei kohuna themselves, the Gemara mentions in Zvachim and in Erchin, are mechaper for various individual averus of the Jewish people, the mechnasayim for arayis and the ksonis for shvichos damim and so forth, and the Gemara Gemara gives a whole list and dashes each one from Sukkim. So in that sense also, they have that. They have that. So Ibn Yaakov adds the point then that the Bigdei Kohuna have an advantage in that sense over the Korbanos. Because then you have, when the Bigdei Kohuna are being worn and the Korbanos are being brought by the Kohen and wearing the Bigdei Kohuna, then you have both advantages, and that's why we're calling the Bigdei Kohuna specifically Bigdei Esron. Okay. More about the Kalim of the Bais Mikdash. Let's focus now on the Oren. Amar Rachva, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Sholosh Aronis Otsa Betzalel. Betzalel, when he made the Oren, he actually made three boxes. And Soy Shel Eitz, the middle, now you're going to have, there was going to be a wood, now the Pasuk says the Oren was going to be made out of Atzi Shittim, and then Mibayis and Mechutz Tzapenu, it was plated on the inside and on the outside with gold. So in Soy Shel Eitz, the middle one that was going to go between the two gold layers was made out of wood, out of Atzi Shittim, Tisha, and it was 9 Tfachim tall. The Pasuk says, I'm of a chetzi kemase. This Gemara, by the way, is following the opinion. The Gemara mentions elsewhere, you have Machloikas, Reb Meir, and Reb Yehuda. The Amma that was used in the Mishkan, in the Bais Mikdash, was it of 5 tfachim or 6? You have Reb Meir holds that all of them were 6 tfachim, unless otherwise specified. There are certain parts of the Mizbeach and the Mizbeach HaZahav that used 5 tefach Amas, but other than that, they used 6 tefach ones. Reb Yehuda holds that the ones used for the Kalim were all 5 tfachim. This machlokas comes up in a number of places in Shas. So according to him, the inner box wouldn't have been 9 amma, wouldn't have been 9 tefachim tall. It would have been only 7.5, because that would be an amma and a half, according to him. 5 plus 2.5. But he were following Reb Meir, that the same, and therefore saying that it was 9, that it was 9 tall. Rashi points out that the Oren didn't have legs. It wasn't like a chest that it wasn't like a dresser or something which has legs between the bottom of it and the ground. It just had a flat bottom and it sat directly on the ground. Pnimi Shel Zahav, inside that was a gold box, Shmona, and it was 8 tefachim tall, because Rashi explains the bottom of the wood box was 1 tefach tall. So therefore, all you have from the bottom, from the inside bottom of that wooden box until the top edge is 8 tefachim. And so inside that, they put this gold box. And then chitzin asara umashu. Then the outer one on the outside of the wood was 10 tefachim and a fraction tall. That was it, 9 tefachim cover the height of the wooden box. Another tefach for the mashu Rashi explains is because the bottom, the gold itself wasn't a tefach thick. It was only a tiny bit thick underneath the wood. So far you have 10 and a fraction. And then in addition, you have one more tefach, which covers the thickness of the kapodas. Because like this, in other words, without that, when you have the kapodas on top of the oren, you would see a seam, you would see a line between them. So instead, you have like the outer golden box, the kapodas fits inside that box, and that way from the outside it looks smooth. So therefore, so that's 10 and a fraction. So the Gemara asks about Tanya Achad also Mashu. We learn in a Braisa that the outer one was 11 and a fraction tall. And the answer is Loitasha, Ha Commander Omer, Yeshba of Yetevach, Ha Commander Omer, Enba of Yetevach. Because there's a machloikas whether the kapodas was a tefach thick or not. So the second Mander Omer holds the kapodas itself was a tefach thick. Therefore, you need a tefach to account for that as well. The first opinion holds that Rashi says that we're referring to the gold underneath. In other words, the first opinion holds again that the gold underneath the wood on the outside, the gold that's going to be touching the ground, is only a mashahu thick. The second opinion holds that it was a full tefach thick. Now, in that case, you need an extra tefach. Now, Rashi says, I don't know where we find that machlokes. So Tosfos Yeshanim actually brings from the Rabbeinu Chananel, who has a somewhat different understanding of the discussion over here, according to which there is in fact elsewhere in Shas there is that discussion of whether the plating was indeed a tefach thick or not. Anyway, Marsha brings over here that actually the symbolism behind it First of all, he brings from the Eben Ezra who asks what's the point of having the wood in the middle anyway? If anyway you're going to be bayis mechutz zapenu, what do you need the wood in the middle for in the first place? So Maharsha says the symbolism of it is the Orion itself represents a person, and therefore it's made out of wood. Ki adam eitz asadah. And then you have the inside and the outside, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, because a Talmid Chacham needs to be toicha kaboroi, he can't be a hypocrite. He can't be looking like gold on the outside and be only plain wood on the inside. His inside has to match his outside. With that said, though, and Mephoshim point out, so in that case, Taka, why didn't Hashem say to make it out of pure gold? And because the symbolism is, a person, as long as a person is on the inside and the outside good, let him not worry too much about how it is between the inside and the outside, kind of. He may even be like Rav Yechon Ben Zakkai, in a dear be'ez a derech melich, you know, you see, because he's busy with his avoda on behalf of the tzibur and teaching Torah and everything, and he doesn't have time to think where exactly he's holding in terms of subjugating his Yetzirah. That's not your department. You can be wood over there as long as you've got Nibayis and Mechutz, the gold, then you're in good shape.
Emsoyim
is the middle one. So the vort is, in other words, so you had, there were three nested boxes. There were three nested boxes. You had a middle box made out of wood. Then they put in a smaller box, and we said 8 tefachim tall, inside it. And then they put a larger box, 10 or 11 tefachim tall, on the outside.
Around the emsoi.
So in other words, that way the emsoi is mibayis and mechutz sapenu, but it's not to sapenu in the sense, for example, now you could understand that sapenu would mean that a gold plated it, like you gold plate anything else. No, we're saying that it means that there were actually separate boxes that nested one inside the other. Mephoshim also points out that there may have been the inner box may have had like a flange around it to cover, because otherwise you have the top edge of the wooden box will be visible when you pick up the kapotas. So there would have been a flange around the edges of the inner box that covers over the exposed wood.
Dimishazel
means the inner box, yeah, would have this flange, yeah. Right. Okay. So the Gemara says, my mashahu. So then in that case, so what's the, when we said 10 and mashahu, so in the last braisa, we said achad also mashahu. So the first braisa, asoro mashahu, then fine. We're saying you have 9 tfachim to cover the wooden box, a mashahu underneath it to cover the underside of it. And then you have it sticks out, and then you have it sticks above the kapurus, because the kapurus is a tefach tall. So there's your 10 in mashahu. But in the second braise, if you're saying that the bottom of it underneath the wood was a full tefach thick, then what's that mashahu? And the answer is, my mashahu is there. That mashahu would be it. The Torah tells us, so there had to be a little bit of a rim around it, and that rim is the mashahu. So it's less than a tefach, so it's not, so we don't count it among the number of the tefachim, but it was there. Tosfos points out, it's not like Rav Yehuda, not like Rach Ba'amar of Yehuda would disagree that there was a zer. The fact is, the pasuk says there was one. He's just not addressing it. He's saying we're addressing only what was needed in order for the wood to be completely covered. We're not addressing the fact that in addition there was a zer. Otherwise, he would have said that it was 10 and 2 mashavus. Okay, so what's the deal about this zer? Amar Rav Yechanan shloisha zerim hay. Marshall, by the way, points out an interesting point over here. Besides for this comparison that we're saying a person is like a tree, ki adam eitz asadah, in fact, you also have the word eitz is the same gematria as kesef. So it represents the point that represents both the Torah is compared to both, the Torah is compared to gold, and the tzaddik is compared to silver. So it represents that a person, he's wood, but he should be on the level of a tzaddik who is also compared to an eitz and who is also compared to silver. Anyway, so Amar Rav Yechanan Shloisha Zerim Hein. There were actually 3 kelim in the Mishkan that each had a zer. Shal Mizbeach, v'shal Shulchan, v'shal Aron. Each one of them, the Torah says, V'asis Haloi Zer Zahav Savi. Shal Mizbeach, each of them represents a crown. Now you have in Pirkei Avos, Shloisha Ksarim Hein. Kesa Torah, Kesa Kohen, V'kesa Malchus, and then V'kesa Shem Tev Ola Agabeyim. So these 3 zerim represent the first 3 of those crowns. Shal Mizbeach Zohar Aron V'Nabloi, the one of the Mizbeach represents, of the Mizbeach HaZohar, that is, that represents the Keser Kohuna. So Aaron had the schus and he got it for his descendants. Shel Shulchan, the one of the Shulchan, which represents wealth, like you have the expression Shulchan, or like you have the expression Shulchan Malachim. So that, Zachar David, but not Lois, David had this chus, and he got it for himself and his descendants. Shel Oren, and Dain Humunach, the one for the Oren, is available. Kol Oroitz of Little, Yavav Yito. Anybody who wants to take it can come and take it. There's no, you don't need Yichus of something to be a Tamar Chacham. So you might think, well, then it's the least important. If it's available to anybody and Aaron and David didn't bother getting it for themselves and their descendants, it must not be that important. Talmud Lomar, therefore the pasuk says, Be Malachim Yimlecha Vagamer, the Torah personified says, with me kings rule. So in other words, when you have somebody who crowns the king, he must be greater than the king himself. So therefore, if we're saying that the Torah gives rulership to kings, that implies the Torah is higher than kings. In fact, it's greater than kingship. It's also greater than kahuna because we have the pasuk yikarehi mipninim that the Torah is more precious than pearls. So the first of all, he says that the pninim can mean in the simple sense that tzitz was decorated with pearls, which is an interesting chiddush that the Maharsha is saying over here. I don't think we find that anywhere else. Usually we say that tzitz was a gold plate, and it had a kodesh lashem, and it had psilt chelas to hold it in place. But here, Marsha is machadish that it actually had pearls attached to it, which is a big chiddush. Because he said that's why when we say yikarehim b'pninim that the Torah is more precious than pearls, so that means if we're saying that the crown of Torah has to be greater than the crown of kahuna, that would imply that the crown of kahuna was decorated with pearls, and yet the Torah outranks that. You also have the Jerusha that the Gemara says in a couple of places that it also means Yikorahim the Kohen Gadol Shenichnas Lefnai V'Lefnim, that the Torah, that Pninim also refers to the Kohen Gadol who goes Lefnai V'Lefnim into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and Torah outranks him. Then Maharsha says, now you also have in Pirkei Avos over there, you have the Keser Shemtov Oila Gabeim. That is the Yiras Hashem that a person has to have to be Zoche in any one of these crowns. Thus, the Gemara continues over here, Rabbi Yochanan and Rami. So Rabbi Yochanan pointed out a contradiction in the way the word is written versus it's read. Ksiv Zor, recorded in Zer. By each one of these three crowns, of these three Kalim, the Torah calls it a Zer. And it's pronounced like that, Zer, with a Tsele under the Yud, under the Zan. Now, usually, many times when there's a Yud, there will actually be a letter, Yud over there. So here, we read it as though there was a Yud there. We read it Zer, but it's written in the Torah, Zayin Reish, which is possible to read as Zoh. So what does it mean? Zoh, Nasas, why is Zer? If the person is Zoicha, then whichever one of these three crowns he has, or multiple of them, becomes a crown for him. Loi Zoh, Nasas, loi Zorah Himena. If he's not Zoicha, then it becomes foreign to him. Rashi explains, particularly, we mean as far as Torah. That if he's zoicha to learn Torah Lishma and to keep it, then it becomes a crown for him. And if not, then it becomes zara, it becomes foreign to him, and he forgets it. Maharsha adds the same thing as far as kahuna and malchus. People are able to forfeit the keser kahuna, and people are able to forfeit the keser malchus. You have koyanim who didn't keep the yuchsin, as it describes in Sefer Ezra, and by a goyalu mina kahuna, they were rejected from the kahuna. You have in Yechezkel, he mentions there were koyanim who served Abba Dezara during the time of the first Beis Mikdash, and they're not going to be able to serve in the Beis Mikdash lasid lavoi as regular koyanim. They're going to be like bali mumin. So a person is able to lose the keser kahuna by not being zoicha. Similarly, a person can lose the keser malchus, as we find that Shlomo's kingship, that Shlomo's kingdom was divided in two. When it comes to Torah, what it means is, besides that for Zara, besides that Rashi is saying that he's going to forget it, Maharsha points out the word Zara, we also find, means a sword. Like, V'hoi Olachem L'Zara, by the Slav, in Parshas Ba'alois, Rashi brings over there that there's some language, Greek, I think, where Zara means a sword. So therefore, so it means it becomes a sword for him, it becomes Sama Mavis to him, as the Gemara goes on to discuss soon. Okay. A couple of more things about the Aron. Rav Yochanan Rami, Ksiv Va'asisa Lacha Aron Eitz. One pasuk says that Hashem says to Moshe, make for yourself an Aron of wood. Uchtiv Va'asu Aron Atzei Shittim. But then elsewhere says, they should make an Aron of Atzei Shittim. Now, in the simple sense, you could say that these are two different Aronis. The famous two Aronis, one that held the Luchas Rishonis and one that held the Luchas Shnias. And in fact, Tosfos says as much. Maharsha refers to it over here. Tosfos says as much in Chulin. Nevertheless, the Gemara is assuming, for purposes of the drasha, that whatever applies to one Aron applies to the other one. So therefore, mikan the Talmud Chacham, Shabnei Edom, it's Sovim Lassus Lemelachdo. From here we learn that a Talmud Chacham, the people of his city have to do his work for him. Because first Hashem is putting it on Moshe, and then he's saying that no, the Jewish people will do it for you. We learned this at the beginning of the Masechta as well, where we had Drasha along those lines as well. Next, about the Oren, it says, Mibayis Mechutz Tapenu, played it on the inside and on the outside. Omar Rava, so from here we learn, Kol Tamar Chacham, Shein Teuchi Kavara, Eini Tamar Chacham. Any Tamar Chacham who's inside is not like his outside, so he's a hypocrite. He puts on a good show on the outside, but inside he's a no goodnik. Eini Tamar Chacham, then he's not a valid Tamar Chacham. Abayavi, Tamar Rava, Rava Va'ulam, At Nikra Te'eva. Not only such a person is not a Tamar Chacham, such a person is called disgusting. Shenema be'iyav, as you find a pasuk in Iyav, it's actually one of the things where Eliphaz is telling him in one of his speeches. He said, now the previous pasuk says, Hein v'kadosh lo yamin, Hashem doesn't even consider his holy ones to be so faithful, because even the holy ones, whether it's malachim or tzaddikim, sometimes trip up. Now he continues, ah, key, how much more so, nisa v'nelach is disgusting and loathsome. Ish shoysa kamayim avla, a person who drinks injustice like water. So we're doubting water means Torah, in mayim al Torah, and he's drinking the water of Torah, and yet he has avla. So Hashem considers him to be a disgusting person, and even hein b'kedoshim, even the kedoshim, then Hashem says don't always live up to what they're supposed to. How much more so such a person? So then the Gemara is going to continue with more about the importance of learning Torah together with Yiras Shemayim, but that will leave for tomorrow, Bez Hashem. Yom Yen Mashiach HaGu'ola, Vav Tevis. In Golos, we're compared to people who go on a sea voyage or go in the desert or any of the four people that I mentioned in Kapitel Kuf Zayin Yodel Hashem Chasda in Afgun Korban Torah. Because we're in the sea, we're in the Maim Rabim of troubles upon us. We're in the Midbar where there's snakes and scorpions and no water, representing the ruchniestic desolation of Golos. We're in jail because we're jailed in Golos. And we're sick because it arouses by us a love sickness, Cholas Abba, to Hashem. So now, when Mashiach Tzidkenu comes, then we'll thank Hashem that he took us out of all four of these situations. Halacha. So now, Shabbos afternoon, after Chazaras HaShatz, we say Tzidkos Chatzet, three Tzidkim, and that's like a Tzidduk Adin for three Tzidkim who passed away Shabbos afternoon. Yosef, Moshe Rabbeinu, and David. That's why we have three Tzidkim. If it's a day when we wouldn't say Tachnun was a weekday, then we don't say it, and then we don't say it when it comes out on Shabbos. However, if they are davening in a base of Oval on Shabbos, usually you don't, because after all, on Shabbos, usually the Oval comes to Shul, but if for whatever reason you're davening in a base of Oval on Shabbos, you would say it, because otherwise it's Pehesia, and Ein Avelus for Pehesia for Shabbos.
What was it?
So we're saying that normally you don't say Tzidkoscha when you wouldn't say Tachnun were a weekday. But you also don't want to do Avelos for Kehesia, so if you happen to be davening in an Ovel's house on Shabbos, you would say it even though otherwise you wouldn't say it over there. Meaning, in other words, the Pashtus, what we mean is, if it was a day when you're anyway not going to be saying it, say, for example, it was during Nissan, or it was your Tes Kislev, or whatever, then you tackle wouldn't say it even a Beis Ovel. But if it's a regular Shabbos, when you would be saying it in Shul, and you would think, I shouldn't say it in a Beis Ovel, because we don't say Tachnun in a Beis Ovel, don't do that, because that would be Avelos for Kehesia, and you can't do that on Shabbos.
People do it, there's one
Avol,
and they had to say the Tzarius, so one of the three Kriyas
Tzarius. Yeah. So maybe sometimes they do tack a dab in their Shabbos in order to have the three Kriyas. Yeah, it could be.
Okay.